$1,000 worth of personal property in each of those 3 years. I would like to start with really issues 3, 4, 5, and 7 in the brief, because they're all interrelated and have to do with the testimony that the government presented from FBI Special Agent Stephen Cepeda. Agent Cepeda was offered both as a summary witness during the course of the trial, and he also presented a number of opinions about whether the purchases made by Ms. Allison with this DISD-issued credit card were for personal purposes or for business purposes. It should be noted that Agent Cepeda really provided almost the entirety of the testimony on whether purchases were for personal or business purposes, that the government did not call anyone from DISD to go through the various purchases to say that a particular purchase was either business authorized or personal, but rather they chose to put on the agent who went through the various purchases and characterized them for the jury. And that's really addressed in issue 3 in the brief, and where we object to the admissibility of Agent Cepeda's testimony, both because it was not proper summary testimony and because his opinions were not properly admissible. The summary testimony was improperly admitted for the reasons that instead of summarizing evidence that had been introduced by the government, what Agent Cepeda did was in fact characterize the evidence. That he was not simply presenting to the jury voluminous records of charges or bank statements or credit card statements or anything of that nature, but rather he prepared charts where he listed his opinions for the jury on whether the different charges made by Ms. Cepeda were personal or business.
Mr. Houston, that, you know, it seems to me that there's, you make a connection between Mr. Talley and Cepeda. They were both CPAs. They were, let me characterize what they both did. They were auditing these receipts, these purchases, to determine whether there's any type of irregularity, which, as I understand it, is what accountants do all the time. There's always audit departments that do these things. And it seems to me that, you correct me if I'm wrong, both gave their opinions, and both gave some structure by which to determine whether these things were personal purchases or business purchases. Now, whether that's, you know, I tend to think that's expert opinion on both sides, okay. But I presume that both of them were considered lay testimony according to this judge. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So what is wrong with Cepeda testifying to what he testified?
Well, let me back
as
up.
As an opinion testimony, a summary at you.
And you're exactly right, Judge Garza, that the government has characterized this as lay testimony. I would submit it is actually expert testimony.
Well, he was never qualified as an expert, was he?
Well, he started off his testimony and talked about he's a special agent with the FBI, he's a certified public accountant, he has a master's of science in accounting, he's taught accounting courses, he's worked in the finance department of a number of corporations, he's had all this specialized training, but then the government
but
wanted to
call him.
But
he was not offered as an expert and he wasn't certified as an expert.
And that's true. I think the government laid the foundation.
So under the code of evidence, we treat it as an opinion by non-expert fact witness.
Well, and this is where, and Judge Garza brought up Jimmy Talley, who was a CPA who was offered by the defense to rebut Agent Cepeda's testimony. What the trial judge chose to do with Judge Talley was instruct the jury that Jimmy Talley was not testifying as an expert. He did not give the same type of instruction in relation to Agent Cepeda's testimony. So
was
he left
requested to give that?
Yeah.
It was objected that the judge should not give such an instruction about Mr. Talley when he hadn't done this with Cepeda. So the judge set up a disparity, I would assert, in credibility between Jimmy Talley, who the judge is saying, well, this person's not an expert. Yes, he gave the same type of testimony as Mr. Cepeda.
But Cepeda was never characterized as an expert by the judge or in the instructions. Is that not correct?
Well, he was not directly characterized as an expert, but I would submit that by telling the jury that Mr. Talley, who is offering the same type of testimony, was not an expert.
Talley gave the same credentials. He's a CPA. He, you know, the only difference is the way they would proceed to distinguish between a personal purchase and a business purchase.
I would agree with you. I think the problem with that, and this is where these points are interrelated, is that when you tell the jury that Mr. Talley, who has the same type of background as Mr. Cepeda, he's not testifying as an expert, you don't tell the jury that Cepeda.
The defense asked the judge to make the same statement about Cepeda.
I don't think that they made the exact request. I think the defense objected to the judge telling the jury that Talley was not an expert, and the judge went ahead. The trial lawyer did not come back and say, well, Judge, if you're going to do that, would you give the same instruction?
So if there was no request that was denied to characterize Cepeda as not an expert, we'll review that on plain error, don't we?
Well, yes, except that there was an objection to characterizing Talley
as the other guy. Yeah, but that's not this one.
Well, you're correct, Your Honor, except that I think that it was error to give that instruction about Talley when a similar instruction was not given about Cepeda. Now, you could come back and on plain error review whether a similar instruction should have been given about Cepeda. And look at it from that point of view, but I think either way, the judge just set up this disparity between the two of them. Now, the government chooses in the brief to characterize the testimony offered by Cepeda as lay testimony, and I would agree with Judge Garza that it's really expert testimony in the guise of
lay testimony. Let's assume, just for hypothetical sake, that in effect they were both expert testimony. Does that change the evidence one iota?
Well,
if they're both non-expert, they're both expert now, does that change anything? The jury knows that they're both CPAs. They know their experience. They know their background and all that. We're not talking about anything of any import, it seems to me.
What Agent Cepeda was doing was really speculating on what was personal and what was business. And what Jimmy Talley was talking about was that the criteria that Agent Cepeda was using to reach his conclusions were not really appropriate under generally accepted accounting principles.
You're characterizing. And I would submit to you that the jury decided that issue.
I think with help from Judge Lindsay basically saying that Jimmy Talley's not an expert, don't pay any attention to him, in effect.
Well, the truth of it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that neither expert, hers or the government's, came to the conclusion that none of the charges were personal.
That's right.
Well,
she admitted as much.
Yeah, and I was going to say there's some evidence.
So on guilt, innocent, it doesn't matter.
It does matter because there's a jurisdictional threshold that you have to cross. I mean, Ms. Allison did admit at the time, at the very beginning of the case, that she had used the card for some personal purchases, bought some groceries, some vases, home internet service, things of that nature. Okay. But you have to, if you're the government, prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she used over $5,000 worth of personal purchases in each year. And that's where you get into the realm of speculation. Yes, there's some evidence that she used card for personal purposes, but not evidence other than Agent Cepeda's speculation that you crossed the threshold of $5,000 in each of the fiscal years alleged in the indictment. It is not whether you characterize Agent Cepeda's testimony as lay testimony, as the government does, or as expert testimony. It is not proper to speculate about whether a particular charge was personal or business.
So from $64,000 in 3 years,
Talley.
He's going to drop that $64,000, almost $65,000, by $50,000 for the 3 years?
I don't think he really did that in his testimony. His testimony was more pointed toward explaining to the jury why the different criteria that were used by Agent Cepeda to distinguish between personal and business charges were not sufficient to do that. I mean, really, the government could have called someone from the Dallas Independent School District to say this charge wasn't authorized and that charge wasn't authorized and this charge wasn't authorized, and they didn't do that. I mean, that would have been clearly the best evidence to present to the jury. You know, and they instead chose to put an FBI agent on just to take all the credit card statements and go through them and come up with his own idea of what was personal and what was business. Now, if he was applying, as the government would have it, just some common sense criteria that you can look at these charges and say, oh, that's personal, then there's no need for that testimony. The jury can do that. You give them the credit card statements and let them draw their own conclusions about it.
Counsel, is there anything in this record that explains by expert testimony or anybody else why the Dallas School Board thought it was necessary to issue 1,200 of these cards?
Judge, I don't know that there's any explanation of why they issued so many. Clearly, it was a bad decision.
Was there a written agreement or a plan that the school board set up and gave all these cards out to virtually every employee they had to what they were supposed to do with these cards?
There was a written agreement that each person who received a card had to sign that set out that the card was to be used for business purposes and not for personal purposes. And Ms. Allison received the card under those circumstances.
And she signed for it and obligated herself to perform in accordance with whatever the plan was that the board was setting up.
She did, and the plan went on to say that if you used it for personal purposes, you'd be subject to disciplinary action, you could be terminated, things of that nature. It didn't really reference criminal prosecution. It made it clear that if you did make personal charges, you had to reimburse the school district for personal charges that were made on the card. And it required the employees to keep records of their charges and turn them into the school district when requested to do that.
You only have 2 minutes. You want to talk to us about position of trust?
Well,
it's your call.
Well, I could do that briefly and maybe kind of tie that in also to whether Section 666 was meant to apply to a person in a low-level position like Ms. Allison in the first place. And there's certainly language in a number of cases that would indicate that Section 666 is entitled to apply to people who have some type of decision-making authority and not a secretary who's authorized to go out and make purchases for the superintendent or things of that nature. And so that is also related to whether she was in a position of trust. Ms. Allison was not someone who had any decision-making authority for the school district. She was a secretary. She had a card so that she could make purchases at the direction of the superintendent who she worked for. So she was not either abusing a trust, nor, perhaps more importantly, was she a person to whom the statute was intended to apply. And at the trial level, the trial attorney did file a motion to dismiss based on the fact that this statute was not intended to apply to someone in Ms. Allison's position. And I would submit to the court that is correct, because if you do apply the statute to someone who's a secretary who doesn't have decision-making authority, then you extend the reach of federal.
The statute doesn't limit any to that, does it? It just gives monetary amounts.
Well, it talks about you have to be an agent.
And she is an agent. You don't contest that.
Well, she's an employee, and I would think agent would be more someone who has the authority to bind the school district in some way, which she certainly does not have the ability to do that. So, I'll reserve the rest
we'll
of my time.
We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Ms. Tolliver? Before you get started, would you tell me about how many of the cardholders were prosecuted?
Two, Your Honor, including Ms. Allison.
Just two.
And I'm not sure where the 12,000 employee figure comes from. I know the judge found at sentencing that there were a relatively small percentage of the employees of the DISD who had these cards. I don't know how many employees overall, and if that 12,000 made it be a relatively small number, but the court did make that finding at sentencing that there was a
I think it's 1,200, not 12.
I'm sorry, 1,200.
I mean, Dallas is a pretty big independent school district.
Dallas is an big independent school district.
And you figure that every school in Dallas probably has maybe 10 of these cards, and you probably come up with a figure of 1,200 pretty much.
Easily. And on the issue of abuse of trust, which was just discussed, she wasn't merely a secretary, and I tried to point that out in my brief. She worked in the office of the superintendent, and her duties were such that there wasn't anybody really monitoring her day-to-day expenditures. And she had this card, she had the ability, she had the option of deciding how to use it, when to use it, how much to use, what vendors to use. She had that kind of authority.
Does the fact that she has a card like this, that she was given a card, in effect reach the threshold position of trust?
I believe it goes a long way toward that, especially when a small percentage, as the court found, of employees were given this particular trust, were allowed this particular responsibility. The fact that she had, she agreed under the agreement with the card to maintain the receipts, she may never have had to turn those receipts in had the school district not been questioning the card use and called for the card program to be discontinued and asked for the receipts to be turned in. She was responsible for that. She was responsible for keeping those receipts at a DISD facility. There weren't any real limits. You can see from the amounts, $2,000 she could spend charge at a time for catering events. So there weren't any low limits placed on the amount she could charge. And again, no one was really questioning day to day what she did with the card, how she used the card. And one of the major points is that because of this, she was able to get away with spending almost $65,000 on personal purchases.
Well, simply because the issue of the card, the school district doesn't do its job in auditing and monitoring it, that doesn't bootstrap her up into the kind of discretionary agent or employee that this enhancement addresses, it doesn't seem to me. I mean, it talks about position of public private must be, have contributed in a significant way to facilitating the concealment. And how does the superintendent's secretary, who goes out and buys little things for the office and the school, rise to the level of a position of public trust, apart from the fact that they trusted her not to misuse her card? I'm talking about her position, not the fact that she had a card.
Well, it was because of her position that she was issued the card. Not every employee qualified to get a card. Only employees.
That has to do more with function than with trust. The people who are given the cards are because of their job has a function that requires minor purchases. It's not because they are such fiduciaries that they get a card. So what is it about the position of superintendent secretary that elevates her to this quasi-fiduciary position of trust?
Part of her agreement when she accepted the card, though, Your Honor, was to make sure that she maintained the records. There weren't any rules that were a part of the record or a part of the agreements which are a part of the record that the district had to monitor it, had to see her receipts at any time.
Well, the very fact that she has to keep records cuts against a position of trust. If she's got to keep minute details of every purchase, she's not given that kind of discretion.
She had to keep them, but she only had to produce them upon the request of the department.
But she never knew when that was coming.
Exactly. That's part of my point, is that she wasn't somebody who had to worry about it happening often, happening frequently. As a matter of fact, when she was caught and she gave a statement to the FBI agent, she talked about how it had gotten so easy, how it was just simple for her to be able to do this. And this is because of the amount of trust that was given her when she was given the card, when she made the agreement to spend the card only for DISD purchases and to maintain the records that would reflect that. She was a secretary, well, she actually, I think her title was administrative assistant, but she wasn't, I mean, she was responsible for making sure that there were catered events for the office of the superintendent. Not every employee had that kind of responsibility. Even her witnesses talked about how they gave her the receipts for catering events, and they didn't know whether or not she charged them through the card, whether or not she had a discretionary account she could have paid them out of in addition to the card. She made those types of decisions on how she was going to do that based on her position as administrative assistant to the superintendent and what those duties entailed.
Are you saying that she had direct responsibility for designating who got cards and how they served under that?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying she had direct responsibility for determining how certain items would be purchased and what items would be purchased.
On her card
or using other funds. There were other funds a witness testified to, and I don't recall who, she could have used for some of these items that were.
The issuer of these cards, these credit cards, is this American Express or?
They were like MasterCards, and there were three different banks. There was JP Morgan Chase. There was Bank of America for most of the period that was covered by it. I think Chase was an independent bank and then was taken over by J.P. Morgan, and they may have been the same entity for some. And when they would take over, the testimony was that they would have to have training again, these people with the cards, before they could get their new card and again agree to only make DISD-related purchases and agree to maintain the records that were required under the plan.
Were there any of the participants who bought personal stuff, reported it, and refunded back to the school district?
I don't recall reading that any employee reimbursed the district. I believe it's Government's Exhibits 10 and 11, I'm not sure, but the FBI agent subpoenaed the actual records from the bank, and they contain the statements of all the employees, not just her. And if you look at those, you'll see that very few employees were even had near the pattern of spending that she did, even came close, I don't think any did, to the amount of spending that she did of the employees who were participating in the P-Card program.
Amount of spending for school district purposes or amount of abuse of the privilege for her personal account?
Both. Total amounts as well as abuse. No one else's abuse, as I've seen in the record, came close to this. As I said, only two employees of the school district who had P cards, including Ms. Allison, were even prosecuted for the theft from the school district. I also wanted to take some of my time to talk about Special Agent Cepeda's testimony. Of course, our position is that it was properly admitted. And I guess I'd like to just kind of clarify what he did testify to, because he testified to some factual matters, and he also summarized and properly summarized voluminous documents. There were about 360 receipts actually turned in by Ms. Allison in two binders. Those binders also included bank statements. He summarized what those charges were, what those amounts were. And in addition to doing that, he did characterize, based on these criteria and these factors, certain of the expenditures as business-related versus personal. If he had simply said, I would submit to court, if he had simply said, after he had laid out the criteria, which he had gleaned from the documents themselves, said that, well, for this particular expenditure, these criteria or these factors are present, there wouldn't have been an argument, I don't think. Because he said, basically, based on these criteria, based on these factors, this I would consider a personal expenditure, was more like a shorthand of saying that these factors, these criteria were present with respect to an individual charge or an individual merchant. As far as the lay versus expert opinion testimony goes, it was Ms. Allison who caused the court to have to give an instruction that Mr. Talley was not an expert. In the record, it's clear that before she even presents her testimony or even calls her first witness, she's put on notice that the government objects to Mr. Talley testifying as an expert. Indeed, her counsel agrees that in his opening statement, he won't mention that Mr. Talley is an expert. Yet when he goes through Mr. Talley's qualifications in front of the jury, he asks in front of the jury that Mr. Talley be qualified as an expert. I would submit that it was reasonable then for the court, in order to avoid any confusion, once it was determined that Mr. Talley wasn't testifying based on accounting principles, but basically was doing what Mr. Or Special Agent Cepeda did, and that was talking about taking a common sense approach to the documents themselves, that it was necessary to avoid any kind of misunderstanding by clarifying that, in fact, Mr. Talley wasn't testifying as an expert. And I also want to point out that during Special Agent Cepeda's testimony, the court repeatedly gave instructions regarding the fact that it was summary testimony, regarding the fact that the documents themselves were in the record, were available to the jury to make the determination about what the facts were themselves, and that they didn't have to rely on his testimony. But the fact was, as Special Agent Cepeda testified, even with all his background as a certified public accountant, it took him 400 to 600 hours to cull through those records to determine what were the expenditures, not only what were the expenditures, but what kind of facts that were present in these documents would support the findings of whether it was personal versus business expenditures. And so the court
tell me where the figure of $5,000 a year comes from.
If do you mean where what the government's proof of it was?
What relevance does that have?
The relevance is that's where the Congress divided the type of employees that 666 would cover. It's not based on their mere titles, but the amount of money they actually stole from these programs receiving federal money. The threshold is that an employee has to steal or misappropriate at least $5,000 worth of property within any 1 year period. And for us here, we allege the periods were the fiscal years of the school district in order to be prosecuted under the statute. So it was an element of the offense.
Did Cepeda address that? Is that one of the things he did?
He did. He went, as a part of going through and summarizing the record and culling and explaining all those facts, he set out the total amount that would be based on personal or would be considered personal based on those factors if the jury accepted his testimony that those factors were relevant in those determinations. Because, again, the documents themselves, the statements were in there, the half of the receipts that she did turn in were in there, including the quarter of the ones that she turned in that were falsified or altered in some way. And it wasn't just based on the documents. He had, or there was evidence, factual evidence, that she admitted, not that she simply grocery shopped using the procurement card, but that she routinely grocery shopped using the procurement card. And so when he explained that there were thousands of dollars in each of these fiscal years that went to grocery stores, you can see the relevance of him determining that that factor might be important and stating it to the jury. When he determined that for particular stores, for most of those thousands of dollars, they were near her home, purchased from stores near her home, that they were purchased after hours, that they were purchased on the weekend, made it even more relevant because she had admitted that not only did she grocery shop, but she routinely grocery shopped, just as she admitted that she bought vases, that she bought kitchenware, that she bought clothing, that she bought all these things. And, you know, if the court would indulge me, even if you don't consider him characterizing, Special Agent Cepeda characterizing these expenditures as either personal or business relating, but simply giving the criteria to the jury, and with the other factual evidence, you could easily get to that $5,000 threshold. This wasn't a...
Did he do it by fiscal year or whatever the year was?
He did it by fiscal year. He did it by fiscal year. He laid it out by fiscal year.
And the total of all of those came to the $64,000?
Yes, Your Honor, the total of all of those. But there was well over $5,000 that he broke down in each of the fiscal years. And just for an example, Your Honor, even without his characterizing the items, if you look at fiscal year that was July 2004 to June 2005, there was testimony from representatives of Dillard's Department Store, TJ Maxx, Marshall's Department Store. They went through the receipts that she did turn in. They talked about how those were for women's clothing, clothing accessories, and we know from the testimony that what she was authorized to buy was snacks, to keep snacks at the superintendent's office, including candy, sodas, coffee, to make sure there was flatware and napkins for these catering events, which when you look at the Office Depot receipts, which were legitimate receipts, you'll see that she ordered those kinds of things from Office Depot. She didn't have need to go get them from a grocery store. But when you look at just the receipts that are in there, the documentary evidence for Dillard's, Marshall's, TJ Maxx, almost $2,800 for that 1 year period. Circuit City, a DVD she paid for $707 that was actually seized from her home, didn't depend on Officer or Special Agent Cepeda. $254 for another DVD player that was actually seized from her home in this period. We're already up to almost $3,800. $198 to Circuit City for DVDs, actual movies. Up to almost $4,000 with that. A portable DVD player, $459, and I apologize, I didn't write down the location, but I believe it was Target or Walmart. $361.90 for pillows and comforters, certainly not for the DISD, just based on looking at the receipts themselves. She admitted that she used the card to pay for her internet service, $263, well over $5,000. And just an example of that year, with looking at the receipts themselves, with the testimony of what it was she was charged with or authorized to purchase, and certainly these were outside of her authorization. And she admitted.
What is the source of your label of what she was authorized to purchase? What is there something in writing?
There's testimony in the record, and it was from Special Agent Cepeda, that she was authorized to buy those, to purchase those things. That's what she was authorized to do.
Where did Cepeda get?
He got it from interviewing her, the superintendent, her boss, the assistant to the superintendent, and it was hearsay, and admittedly so, but it was not objected to, and so it was evidence. You know, properly considered evidence of what she was authorized to buy. There wasn't anything, you know, to dispute that.
Was there any dollar limit on any individual's use of the card for purchase?
There were some limits, but whatever they were, Your Honor, isn't evident from the record, because like I said, she had expenditures single expenditures that surpassed $2,000 at a time.
And to whom did the charge for the on the card, where did the store get their money?
From the bank, just like a credit card, and the school district paid the credit card bill. After Olison was supposed to go through and certify that these were district purchases, then she submitted those, the testimony was, and the school district paid.
And probably nobody at the school district acted on each of those purchases that you've identified as being clearly personal.
Exactly, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Tolliver. Mr. Utterson, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me start with talking about the abuse of trust just real briefly, because if you look at the application notes to Section 3B1.3 in the guidelines, a position of trust is characterized by professional or managerial discretion, i.e. substantial discretionary judgment. There's really not any evidence that Ms. Olison had that type of managerial discretion or could exercise substantial discretionary judgment in her position. She was issued a card so that she could make purchases at the direction of the superintendent for DISD purposes. She's not out organizing events, deciding what events to have on her own. She works for the superintendent. And it's just that kind of ties into to the government talking about the grocery purchases or any other purchases that Ms. Olison made. Yes, she admitted using the card for grocery purchases. There's no evidence from the superintendent that he didn't tell her to tell Ms. Olison to go out and buy groceries for an event, for some function that was going to be in the office. Again, the government, for whatever reason, chose not to put that testimony on, but instead had Agent Cepeda offer testimony about whether these were authorized or not, when clearly the best evidence would have been to have the superintendent come in and talk about that. As far as Agent Cepeda summarizing the testimony or the evidence in the case, and this is where the trial court's rulings that I would submit are somewhat contradictory, in that Agent Cepeda prepared exhibits, basically charts for each of the fiscal years in which he purported to summarize the evidence and expressed his opinions about what was personal and what was business. The trial judge said, well, those charts aren't proper summary evidence, and he refused to allow those charts to go back to the jury room. But on the other hand, he said, well, but Agent Cepeda could use those as demonstrative aids. And so basically Agent Cepeda just spent the whole time orally testifying to everything that was on the charts and went through it ad nauseum, giving the type of testimony that on the one hand the judge said wasn't proper summary testimony, but on the other hand the judge allowed him to do it. It really was not proper summary testimony. This court has always expressed some, I would say, skepticism about summary testimony, because what Agent Cepeda did was not just summarize documents, but he gave an argument, in effect, for the government that all of these things that he characterized as personal expenditures were personal, and that's not what summary testimony is intended to do. He wasn't just listing the documents or putting them in categories. I mean, he was expressing opinions during the course of his testimony in a way that this court has always said that a summary witness should not do. And for that reason, I would say it was not proper summary testimony. It was also not proper opinion testimony. I mean, it's clearly not proper either as a lay opinion or as an expert opinion. Unless the court has some other questions, I would rely on the briefs in this case and ask that the conviction of Ms. Olison be overturned.
Thank you, Mr. Utterson.
Thank you, Your
Honor. You want to take a break? You okay?
Yeah.